As we begin today, we need to remember that we are deep into the Lenten season now. As we read through the Gospels, we find Jesus' life, his earthly life, being threatened more and more frequently, and all of the head-scratching miracles that have swelled the crowds are all behind him now. And the people who follow him now have to act and choose to do so through faith in what they have already heard and seen. He had authority. Jesus' authority was most keenly felt among those who had been with him the longest, naturally, but the number of new followers was increasing by the hour. It now included Jewish folks, of course, and Samaritan folks, and Roman folks, and a broad spectrum of rich and poor alike. As we begin today with the famous story of raising Lazarus from the dead, already a fading memory, Jesus has just hours ago entered Jerusalem in a festive style, riding a donkey while the throngs waved their palm branches and spread their cloaks and extolled his holiness. As we begin today, some Greeks have come to Jerusalem for the festival. And this is new, an expansion well beyond the children of Israel and the trusting Samaritans. And these Greek persons come respectfully to Philip, one of the core disciples, and ask to see Jesus. They want to meet this Jesus. And Philip, for all of his experience, is perplexed about what to do next. Jesus has not welcomed Greeks before. That was not in the disciple training manual. How do you welcome Greeks? And so he hauls himself right up the chain of command. And he asks the first disciple called, according to the Gospel of John, who was Andrew. And Andrew's not quite sure what to do either. So he takes him along and they present the request to Jesus in person. Now, Jesus is a rabbi, and rabbis are famous for answering a question with a question, that kind of thing. Rabbi, why do you always answer a question with a question? Why should I not answer a question with a question? And so it goes. Rabbis are famous for sometimes being less straightforward than one would wish. But even for all that, I'm sure the two messengers did not expect this odd reaction, this wistful reaction from their Lord. Because the arrival of these Greeks signifies something to Jesus that they do not perceive. Maybe the interest shown by these strangers is a sign that his message is finally radiated out beyond his own people and their Roman military retainers. Maybe he's just good at reading the handwriting on the wall, and the escalating violence surrounding him is showing him a pretty clear pattern now that it's time to wrap things up. We don't know all the factors that gave birth to this odd response, but Jesus takes this event of the Greeks coming to see him as a tipping point. And he declares that now, at last, the hour has come for him to be glorified. I'm sure at this point that the disciples, who have grown increasingly uncomfortable with Jesus' predictions of his dire end, are hoping for a different outcome. Glorified, Lord. Well, they just gave you a parade. They want to crown you their king. Isn't that glory enough? Maybe. In worldly terms alone, it would be glory enough, but that is not the glory that Jesus feels is his destiny. And so he offers them yet another reference to his imminent demise. Very truly, I tell you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. And they probably had not thought of it that way before. That the destiny of the wheat can kind of go either way, right? grains can be consumed, or grains can be planted to create more grain. And now that even the Greeks are asking about him, Jesus truly understands and accepts that being a local celebrity alone is not his path. Being nourishment for his immediate neighborhood alone is not his path. He has given himself fully to their healing, of course he has, to their growing, to their learning to trust God, but his work is bigger than that and must extend itself forward through history, through the sad vehicle of his martyrdom. He then expands his own understanding to the rest of us, like it or not, comfortable or not. He shares, for his sharing time is running out. And we are encouraged not to fall in love with this earthly life, with this local life alone, for it must inevitably end. We must inevitably relocate. But if we fall in love with the life of the Spirit, if we fall in love with the ways of God, well, that way and that life is eternal. And then he says to the Greeks and the Romans and Samaritans and the Jews and the Catholics and the Calvinists and the Methodists too, whoever serves me must follow me. This is a big theme in the Gospel of John. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, that is where my servant will also be. Whoever serves me, God will honor. And we know, sort of, at least, what that following will look like. It is not local only, reserved for the immediate good old boys and girls that we know and trust. It goes beyond. It goes ever beyond as we perpetuate his teachings through the way we live and the way we love and the way we choose. Because those Greeks, they're still showing up, you know. And they still want to meet Jesus. And when they show up, we are wise to do what Philip did, to run their inquiry through a chain of command. We don't have to bear the brunt of the entire introduction just ourselves. We can introduce them to another representative of Christ like he did. And we can even do something the disciples could not have done. We can introduce folks to the church. The lived out example of what the grain of wheat looks like after 20 centuries of being sowed and harvested and sowed and harvested and sowed and harvested and multiplied millions, literally millions of times over. Serving with Jesus in the world can be very rewarding, deeply gratifying, sweet and meaningful and profound. It can also be very discouraging, harrowing even, sad and bleak and shallow sometimes. When the grain of, let's call it the Jesus wheat, is planted in rich soil, we have a different experience than when we try to sow it in the hard scrabble. But serving with Jesus requires us to be where he is. And you know where that is. He's everywhere. This day, then, we are encouraged to keep planting, to keep loving, and to keep striving for the good. Because life eternal awaits us. Amen.